Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the podcast of 2023, the first one. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody.
I'm Steve Roberts, and this is the better version, Allie Bills, and we are excited to be here with you today. We have a live, as you know, this is live, and we have a full house here. It's kind of intimidating a little bit. What do you think,
Allie? Some good energy in the room. I don't know how we're going to keep everybody quiet.
I know.
There is great energy in the room. I love it.
Great energy in the room. So we are thrilled to come back this year and do this. And as you know, we've actually learned from some of our mistakes, and we have scheduled out a year in advance. So there's no excuses why you can't be on this year's podcast with us.
And hopefully you heard the music this time and the audio is ready to go. So I think after the first year, we have this down. It's awesome.
Props to Cody. But, you know, for those of you that are new to this or haven't had the opportunity to join us, I kind of want to touch base on why we're doing this. Yeah. And it isn't to talk about work. It isn't to talk about woe is me or bad things. It's really to talk about ways and share stories how we could better each other and give you challenges that hopefully you can take something away to better yourself in your life.
Definitely. We always like to start off all of the podcast with a story, something happened with the week. And we do try to come up with topics that we feel are really relevant to what we're going through, whether it's socially or economically, but we do want to keep it light and we want to add value. We want to make sure that we're bringing people and or conversations on here that we feel like we can take away and be better for it, but also really just unite. And we feel like this last year we got to know a lot of people in-house so much better, and just stories, you know, just every person has a unique story, and we could probably take the time to put everybody in the hot seat and just be so impressed and take away so much from every single person in this company. But we do want to make sure that we continue to highlight the Intercap family, because there's a lot of incredible stories, experiences that we want to share. But speaking of experiences, we do like to start always with a story or something that happened in the week. And to start the new year, Steve has a new man crush. I don't know if you want to share that with everybody.
You know, but kind of awkward, Allie, you're putting me on the spot, but it was a weird situation. So we had a great event yesterday, and I came away and I went home after the event and did a little thinking.
All the guys in here are really nervous all of a sudden.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous telling this, but anyway, so I had to go pick up our speaker for today at the airport last night. He arrived at 10, his arrival was at 10:20. I was not happy about that, but you know, you just got to do some things. Yeah. So I head down there and it wasn't at the general airport. It was at the private airport. And so I walk in, and I've never been to that particular side. I go to the normal airport, Allie. And
this was the special side.
Special airport. Yeah. So I go in and I followed my instructions. I give them the tail number. They said, you can go through the gate. Just go through the gate and you can wait on the runway. And I'm like, wow, this is A-OK. So I go through the gate. I'm sitting on the runway. Well, I don't know, probably 15 feet, a plane taxis up. It's a small private jet, and a Suburban pulls up in front of the jet right next to the airplane, which I thought was cool. And a guy gets off, and he has this really nice jacket, fur inside, stocking cap, and I'm sitting in my car. Oh, I'm sitting in my wife's car, actually, and she couldn't go because she was working on a listing. And wink, wink, right? So I'm sitting there, and this guy comes closer, and I'm like, man, he is a very good looking guy. I mean, his skin was tight. And I'm like,
I fell in love with the jacket.
And then I'm like, that's a cool beanie. I mean, you could tell it was expensive.
Fashion first.
And then it was the face. And I'm like, oh, I mean, I'm like, wow. So, and it's very chiseled, and he got closer, and the closer he came to the car, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's Rob Lowe. And he got right, my windows are tinted, so he gets right to the edge of my car, and he's kind of looking at my wife's car. And I'm looking through the windows, and I'm like, that's Rob Lowe. My wife is going to be so mad she did not come, because she loves Rob Lowe. And I'm thinking is his skin is so incredibly perfect. The guy's got a chiseled chin and he is just strapping good looking.
He's 50 and what lotion does
58.
He use? 58.
58. He's older than me. Unfair, Ali.
Well, you did ask. Maybe he does some work. I'm going to go with yes on that.
Yeah. I'm thinking, should I grab my phone? All these things are going, but I don't want to be that guy. But I got my wife will never believe this.
I don't know what to do.
I was frozen.
You stare at him.
But.
Or grab your phone.
And it was weird. He was like, almost from me to you. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Rob Lowe. Rob Lowe, St. Elmo's Fire. Anyway, so that was the story. He walked back. He walked into that little room and then he came back and he got in the Suburban and left. And so I Googled the tail number on the plane and it was coming. It came from LAX. And I'm thinking, why is Rob Lowe coming to get hypothermia in Salt Lake City? But then it dawned on me, Sundance.
Yeah.
So Sundance.
So Steve's going back to the airport tonight to see who comes in tonight.
No, I'm going to the party. I'm going to the party tonight. I'd rather party than see Rob Lowe again. My wife may not be there. She might be sitting there.
Yeah, she missed out. Well, Steve always has a great story. Not that many man crushes. This was a first, but.
No, it was just, he was a very strapping, just very nice features. Just a good looking guy.
Well, we'll be sure to write him a letter.
Okay.
That's great.
Maybe we can get him on the podcast.
Perfect. Well, we have our own Rob Lowe here with us today.
Yeah, we do.
And why don't you kind of introduce what we're going to be doing today?
So, yeah. So this year, I really want to focus on opportunity. And I think it's so easy to get in a rut or a routine. And sometimes our glasses become foggy and we really don't see what's out in front of us until we hear people's story of how they overcome and how they take and embrace opportunity. And the funny thing about opportunity is it faces us every day. It's just a choice whether we decide to do something with it or not.
Yeah.
And so in meeting Mr. Steve Way over here, when I first met him, other than he's a big guy, I thought, wow, he sat down and shared his story. And it's a very, very good story. It's one that could really go either way, depending on what you decide to do. And I really don't want to get into too much because that's his story to tell, but we are blessed to have him on the show today and share with all of you kind of his journey of what that looks like.
It's awesome. And, you know, I had a chance to hear his story as well. And I think going into this year, I was meeting with a group of people and they said, you know, too many of us, you know, put on the hat of a business we started 15 years ago or put the plaque on the wall of something we did last year. But guess what? Our past is over. You know, you're only as good as your last game. You're only as good as yesterday. But we want to learn from those experiences. They shape and mold who we are. But they give us the ability to keep our eyes forward and to move forward and to determine our future. So
yeah.
So Steve is an incredible author.
Hello.
Of his own story. And when a lot of people would have written it a different way, he chose to be the hero of his own story.
Or not write it at all.
And to create a future for himself that he can continue to look toward because he's so grateful for his past and his move forward from it. But we're going to let you just kind of dive in and share your story. And I'm sure we'll butt in a little bit here and there because there's just some parts of it that
we're gonna put
we
want to
dig
spot.
Deeper on.
I like it.
And so you're on.
Hello, everybody. I'm on. Hi. I think a lot of us at Intercap have heard my story here and there, but this is the first time telling it publicly, in a way. So yeah, thank you for having me on. I'm super grateful, super lucky to be here. So yeah, here we go. So once upon a time, in a land far, far away, So I was born in China, in mainland China. And right, should we just start?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. And so the time I was born in 91, and during that time it was one child policy in China. And my mom and dad had me and they got divorced soon after. They were very young. So pretty much I grew up with my grandparents. My grandpa at that time was a big deal, right? My grandpa had he was the director of coal and agriculture for the country, and we had pretty much everything. I didn't know this until, you know, later on in life, because my grandma was so old, and they grew up in the Cultural Revolution, which they didn't have anything. So even though we were the richest family in town or whatnot, my grandma would like steal water. Another story. I'll tell you another time. So I was born, parents got divorced, and then my grandpa really, you know, once we knew that, like, this is my grandson, he really wanted to do the best for me. So before I even came out of my mom, he already started working on my paperwork for the United States. So this is before I was born. And so I was born into this environment where we had everything. You know, there was three German cars in like the whole province, right? The governor had one. One of the main senators had one, and our family had one. We had the first cell phone, we had the first computer, you know, and things like that. So that's the environment that I was born in. And, you know, fast forward 10 years later, in 2002, they put me on a plane, and by myself, I flew to LA to live with my aunt. At that time, to be able to come from mainland China to America was a big deal, right? And that's why when he's like, "You're so tall," I'm like, "Well, because I'm from the north, and we don't really get to come here." And normally, people are from Hong Kong, and you know, people are from the south and Taiwan, and they're a little smaller. So, anyways, came to the United States, and when I got here, my aunt was working two jobs, and we lived in the border of East LA and Alhambra. So the environment I grew up in was 50% Asian, 50% Hispanic. And I came from an environment where we had everything. We had multiple houses, we had chauffeurs, right? Into an environment where I was sleeping in the living room, and my aunt had a two-bedroom apartment with a roommate. I was so young, so I didn't understand. But soon after that, while that was happening, the power shifted in China. So our family going from, you know, having it all to being on the opposite side of the government, and they literally came and took everything. So the media was after us, everything was after us, liquidated all the bank account, liquidated all the trust, liquidated all our real estate, and everything was gone. And this was starting to happen, like, I guess our family's asset was frozen probably a year or two before I even came to the United States. I just didn't know this because I was so young. And the crazy part was, during that time, you know, they said my grandpa embezzled a whole bunch of money. They never found the money. It's not here because I'm doing loans. So I apologize to Kat once a month, be like, "Sorry, there's nothing here." Oh, but so literally we don't have, you know, we went from having everything to nothing. And the crazy part is my grandpa actually got the death sentence, right? And it's just, it's a messed up system. And if you're on the wrong side of it, you have a lot of power, there's nothing you can do. So my grandpa gets the death sentence, he's in prison. And my grandma goes back to the village and try to gather as much money as possible so we could pay. So whatever we had from the rest of the family and relatives, we paid the lawyers. And death sentence became life sentence. Life sentence became a 20-year sentence. And he was actually in prison for 13 years. And eventually, he just got out like 5 years ago. So that was that, right? but anyways, going back. So now I'm in America. You know, I'm growing up with all my Hispanic friends in East LA. All the, you know, the gangsters, the good guys, everybody, they're all my friends because I love people and I got along with everybody. But it was cool because I was so young and I was just like, it is what it is, right? It's the environment that you're in. You didn't feel poor and you didn't feel rich. It's just the environment that you had. So I just kind of went with the flow. But, and then from there, I eventually went to, during that time, my aunt just Rudy just brought me to the church because it was her. And then my sister came. My sister's really my aunt's kid, but we grew up together. She was born in America, but she went back to China when she was 2 years old to kind of grow up with my grandparents. So it was my aunt working two jobs. I was living in an apartment in East LA, and me and my little sister, right, at this point. And it was just me and her every day while my aunt worked. So going to college or anything like that wasn't even in the works. It was just, you know, whatever you can do, start working and try to help out, right? I didn't mind it because I thought, oh, cool, I get to make some money, I could do my own thing. But my aunt was pretty strict. She made us go to church every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Wow.
So I pretty much grew up in the church. Yeah, probably saved my life because I'm kind of crazy. So from there, and because my aunt's, her sphere was so small, and all she knew was what she know, right, which is people from church. And at that time, she was like, you should go be a nurse. They make $50,000, $60,000. And to us, it was like, holy cow, $50,000, $60,000. And you do a lot of overtime, you make $75,000, right? I'm like, that's crazy.
Good money.
Mm-hmm. So she goes, why don't you go to Arizona? We have a family friend that that's doing the same thing. His dad just had a stroke a year ago. So if you take care of his dad, that would be your rent. So you could, you know, stay with him and you could work and, you know, whatnot. So that's what brought me from LA to Arizona. I'm in Arizona. I'm working night shift as a nursing assistant. If you ever met a nursing assistant, holy cow. If you think like garbage man and whatnot is a tough job, no. Nursing assistant, that's a tough job. I was in the ICU. I was in the cold blue unit. All I did was resuscitations and cleanups. Like, it was just my first day of work. Like, this lady came back from X-ray and she was just covered in poop from like head to toe. I'm like, whoa.
I got this.
This is my life. Yeah. So I'm working from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. as nursing assistant. I'll get home and I'll try to do some, you know, classes for nursing. Honestly, I never really focused in school because that was never a thing. It was always survival. So from there, I went.
So no passion there. No passion in
I couldn't say no passion because I loved people. So when I was working there, everybody hated their job. I actually didn't mind it because there was a lot of retired people and people that did very well that went to the hospital. So I just, like, if I knew they did well, I just went in the room. I just talked to them. Like, I had conversations with them. I learned from them and just kind of like how I'm wired in a way, right? And then I moved into town with some, you know, people from church, and we call ourselves the House of the Prodigal Sons because we all grew up from the church and none of us were good people. We're just like nuts. It was a nut house. We had, you know, it wasn't great. Two guys out there, one was doing wholesaling. He was learning how to wholesale, and another guy was on mortgages. So he was working for Toll Brothers, and he was going to go into like a regular loan officer, right? And at that time, I did have a little distribution company. It's just I didn't make money, but I didn't really lose money. Kind of leverage some relationship that I made, nothing important. And they're like, oh, you could sell. Why don't you do this with us? So I chose mortgages because I figured wholesaling is not going to last forever. Big mistake probably because that guy's making so much money right now. So I get into, so then I spent every single, like I spent all my money to get licensed. And I'm like, holy cow, I can't fail because if I fail, I'm done. I don't have any more money. So I passed my test, started working. And I realized, I was like, hey man, we got this, right? He's like, yeah, don't worry. We got it. I know exactly what to do. You just go sell. I get there. I'm like, dude, he just told me you're $16,000 in the hole. You've been living on a draw. He was horrible, right? But it was too late because I already quit my job. I quit school. I called my parents. Oh, not my parents. I called my aunt, which she told everybody else. I said, hey, I'm not going to do this nursing thing anymore. I am going to do loans. Oh, God. She freaked out. She was like, no, what are you doing? You're wasting your life. Look at all this stuff we did for you. And blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. I already done it. Like, it is what it is. I'm doing this. And the whole family was like, no, this is like everybody. My dad was calling from China. Everybody, right? I'm like, man, I haven't heard from you guys for years. Like, okay. So everybody's just like, your life is going to be horrible. And it's funny because my dad from China calls me and he goes, we didn't have a relationship when I was young, but now we have a great relationship. He's like, what are you doing? But I was like, first of all, you have no idea what I'm doing. I was like, do you know what I'm doing? He's like, no, but your instinct, you're making a bad mistake. I'm like, I know. I was like, so just, you know, kind of like, just get out, right? Like, everybody just leave me alone. Let me do my own thing. So I have all of this pressure from the family that's like, you're going to fail. And it's so crazy, right? Because when you talk to Chinese families, normally they want you to be a doctor. That's such low expectation for me. Just want to be a nurse, right? Like, that's what, you know? It wasn't even like, we want you to succeed, go to pre-med, be a doctor. It's like, we just want you to be a nurse. And I'm like, okay.
They saw the best in you.
Yeah, they did, right? So that happened. I'm getting into this environment. I couldn't tell my family, right? Because first of all, they didn't have any money. It's not like they could help me out. And second of all, the I told you so, which is no good for me. So I started out with negative $16,000 in the mortgage industry and with no money, and it was just so awesome. So first year. So
who did believe in you?
Yeah. So 6 months into it.
That's a good question.
Yeah. 6 months into it, I had literally no more money, took every single loan I can take. My credit is trash. That was the first conversation I had to have, just so you know, I got shitty credit. and literally used up every single resources I could possibly have, and I get a phone call. And I know it was a China number, so I picked up, and it was my grandma from prison. And my grandpa said, hey, I heard what happened. I'm like, oh, God. And he was like, hey, I just want you to know, I don't care, don't listen to none of them. They don't know. They're like, they're all small-minded people. This is what he said. He's like, they're all small-minded people. He was like, I'm so proud of you. I'm so glad you did this. Thank God you're not going to be a nurse. He was like, I've been in prison for 7 years now. He was like, and honest, no, 10 years? I don't know, it's been a little bit. And then he was like, so I just want you to know that I support you. And that was really all I needed because he was my hero growing up, right? He was just, I wanted to be him. I wanted to bring our family back to where that was, right? He was just the person that I always looked up to. So yeah, he's the one that called. But it's so crazy because my first year in mortgages, I made $12,000 gross my first year.
Killed it.
Still in the hole $4,000.
Yeah, you're still in the hole, buddy.
Oh, I left that company. I was like, nah, I'm not doing this. This is not good. Yeah. So that's my first year, right? $12,000 gross. Second year, I think I made like $21,000. But the crazy thing is I had no money and no one, like there's no more credit, nothing. I'm like, oh man, someone's going to come and take my Corolla. This is not good. and it was so crazy because during that time, I didn't know what else to do. No one would help me. No one would tell me what to do. They just thought, like, oh, figure it out, right? So I was like, I don't know what to do. So then I called Title and I got like a list of all the realtors in the valley and I literally called 200 calls a day. I was so nervous. I mean, I have a little bit of accent, right? But like not bad, but literally I was calling realtors. I couldn't pronounce the words. I'm like, ugh, and I would just hang up. But I did two, but I was like, who cares, right? I have nothing else going on. Like I'm already screwed. So I made 200 calls a day and just trying to get some kind of traction. Didn't get any traction. But I still did it. So second year, I'm like, what the heck am I going to do? So then I realized, I was like, you know what? No one will give me money. You know who else? Student loans, right? So then I went to community college. I applied for some classes. Didn't really go to them. But I got some money to live off my second year. So that's how my second year happened. But from there, I realized I was focusing so much on the bigger picture, the bigger funnels, right? I was focusing so much on like the Chinese business, international business, and things like that, where I wasn't really focused on the right now business. And so towards the end of my second year, I realized, okay, I need to start doing the now business, right? And in Phoenix, Arizona, at that time, Mandarin speaking wasn't really that popular. But if you're Hispanic, you kill. Thank God I grew up in East LA. With all my Cholo friends. So then I started doing a lot of loans for Hispanic clients. And at one point, and that's kind of how I turned my business around. At one point, I was Latino's favorite Chino. So True story. There was a banner. Oh. So at one point, either you got along with one of those popular, you know, Hispanic borrowers, or you went with the Chinese guy. Everybody loved the Chinese guy, right? And because they think I'm good with numbers. So, you know. So that's kind of how it turned out. But the whole thing is the way I, you know, the thing is with me, I feel like my story, you could look at it from different perspectives, right? Like, I literally bounced from family to family to family. I never grew up with my own parents, right? You know, a lot of times the feeling where like, it's fine, I'm just gonna do the best I can, it is what it is, no matter what, they will still love me. I didn't have that a lot of times, because a lot of times I just felt like, you know, thank you so much for taking care of me, thank you so much for raising me, and that's kind of my life, right?
You always had a lot of gratitude just because of who you are, right? But
yeah, I think I had that because I really, and I'm not just saying this, I truly believe this because I look at my life like this, right? My mom and dad, without my mom and dad, even though they got divorced and I didn't kind of grow up with them, there wouldn't be me, right? So I thank my mom and dad for staying together, making me, didn't abort me, right? At that time, I was super popular in China because of the one-child policy. And I'm super grateful for my grandparents because my grandpa had that ambition for me, right? So seeing that life, seeing having it all, going to places where everybody was like, ooh, that's a big deal. That gave me the ambition. And then I went to LA where it was like hard knock life, and I learned hard work and I learned gratitude and I met God. And all of these things, I really feel like I was so blessed. Like God really blessed me to give me this whole platform where like I have my segments in life where it prepares me to really do everything I possibly could, right? And that's kind of how I look at my life. And I truly believe that. I am a person that truly believes everything that happens to us is absolutely for us and for a reason. And you have to take your obstacles and the adversities that you see in life as something that to test you to get to the next level. Because without hardship, what's the point of it all?
Well, when you shared the story with me, the one thing you said over and over again, and I love this, is that life didn't happen to you, it happened for you. Mm-hmm. And that is definitely a mindset that you have to have, and you have to shift from maybe some bad experiences where you think it was out of my control, it happened to me. But what you do with it, obviously, is what it does for you. But you said mindset wasn't enough. You followed up with the important thing.
Yeah.
You had a great mindset about it, but what was the key for you? I mean, he was resourceful. I mean,
oh, I was.
Signed up for school to get money. Like, he was resourceful. He found ways. But did that equal? I mean, your mindset wasn't enough. You had to.
Yeah, it was all action, right? Action. You had to take action because at the end of the day, like, sitting there, it doesn't mean anything, right? It's just either you sit there and you're like, poor me, I have no money. I mean, Coinstar was my best friend at one point. And now I look back, I was like, damn, I was so dumb. They took so much more money away from you. So you don't know, right? The more you know. So, but the thing is, okay, so at the end of my second year in mortgages and beginning of my third is when I start turning things around. My sister, who at that time was getting into psychology, and she started seeing a therapist. And in our culture, it was such a taboo, right, to see a therapist. And she calls her, like, hey, I just want you to know, like, I'm seeing a psychologist, blah, blah. I'm like, are you okay? She's like, yeah, I'm okay. She was like, but just so you know, like, I'm pretty messed up. She's like, if I'm messed up, you are way messed up. I'm like, okay, whatever. So for Christmas, she goes, I buy you a session at this therapist. You know, it's $80 for an hour. I was like, are you out of your mind? She was like, gosh, just go. Like, okay. I was like, okay, fine. So I go to this therapist. And the first thing I said was, first of all, I don't want to talk about my past. I don't want to talk about my feelings. I really need to make this work thing work. I really need to make business work. So I want to talk about that. He was like, okay. So I'm telling him all these things I want to do, blah, blah, blah. And the first thing he said to me, he's like, you know you have ADHD, right? And I'm like, yeah, I do. Don't talk about that. That's my superpower. It's cool. I'm like, that's what allows me to do four things at a time. I'm like, it's cool. Don't worry about that. Move on, right? And then he goes, and then he just kept listening to me talk. And then towards the end, he said something. And he said, can I just give you advice? I said, oh, yeah, of course. Like, give you $80. You should give me something. And he said, just remember this one thing. He said, anything worth doing is worth doing shitty. I'm like, what a shitty advice. You know, like, you know, I'm like, okay. So I left, flew back to Arizona. And I remember that week I was in the office. It was 7 p.m. I was finishing up, like reaching out to realtors and whatnot. I'm like, okay, I should just go home. Finish up later. And I remember this quote, anything worth doing is worth doing shitty. And what's crazy is that quote, like, literally changed my life, because a lot of times what we do is we don't do things because we're like, oh, it'll be better if I have this other piece, or like, I could wait until I have that, right? But with this whole anything worth doing is worth doing shitty, it allowed me to start things. And what I realized, once I start it, I will finish it. But the problem is, a lot of times we just plan and think, but we never do, right? But adding that, like, it's all about doing and then figuring it out later, that's what shifted. Right, so I gotta have the most positive mindset and all that stuff. Positive mindset got me $12,000. Right, action what took me to.
Love that. We hear all the time, like, ready, aim, fire. But that little quote of anything worth doing is worth doing shitty promotes you to move forward. But now you go ready, fire, then aim. And I think if you're a perfectionist, you are just like, it's got to be perfect before I do this, and it just inhibits us so much.
You'll never do it, right?
You know, Steve, I've known each other. We've talked about a lot over the years, which has been great. But this morning when we sat down just prior to this and you said that quote, I'm not going to lie. I'm like, what? Have you lost your mind? Anything worth doing shitty?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I have to digest that for a minute, but it makes sense.
Yeah,
it makes sense. Just start something.
Something is better.
Just be proactive. Do something.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing, especially in this environment, right? Like, we don't know what's going to work. We don't know. Just do it, right? Thinking is not going to work. Planning is not going to work.
And look at you now. Work. Handsome, well-dressed.
Yeah. All of that.
Recently engaged. Recently engaged to a very pretty gal.
Yeah.
I mean, life's pretty good.
Yeah. Steve's adopting me. Now I have a dad in Utah. It's great.
You do call me dad. I mean,
this is true. Mm-hmm.
How do you think that some of these, all of these things from your past that were hard, I mean, if you were to sit and write down everything from your past that just was hard, would that list be long? I mean, did you recognize that things were hard, or were you just like this positive, grateful kid, or could you make a good list and then say, this is what it did for me?
Now I can, but at that time, because I was bouncing around so much, it was more just gratitude. Survival, okay. Yeah, it was gratitude, like, well, you know, I can't really complain like the other kids, because that's not my mom, right? She did the best she could, love her to death, but I still have the thing in the back of my mind, like, oh, Steve, make sure you do this, make sure you do that.
You know what's always been fascinating with me, Steve, is I've known your story, right? Mm-hmm. We've talked long and hard about it and in depth, but had you not shared that with me, I would have never guessed that. Because every time I'm around you, you're positive. You have great energy. The perception is, oh, this guy's got it all. Man, he's great. I mean, nobody would know your story, because I never see you feel sorry for yourself. I never have seen you down. I've never seen you like, woe is me, it's a pity party. I've never once seen that in you. And you have every reason to dwell on that and let it hurt opportunities that have come to you in life.
Thank you for saying that. I mean, yeah, right? That's what kind of is perspective, right? And I feel like that's the only thing we have control. We don't have a lot of control in our life. We have control over perspective and how we respond to situations. But talking about adversities and everything, I have a really good one to share. We're definitely gonna, ooh, sorry guys. 2020 happened, and this is like our business just kind of blew up. All the relationship I'm trying to do in the last 3 years are finally clicking. I was working at another company, this is before Intercap, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is great. We're finally at the place that we want to be. And while everybody's doing refinances, we had about $11 million in the pipeline on a monthly basis for purchases. It was awesome, right? And towards the mid to end of 2020, the company we're at, operations kind of just fell apart. My underwriting turn time went from 5 days to 45 days, eventually 60 days. imagine having initial underwriting for 60 days for purchase and refis, right? Literally, realtors will come to the office and just take their files. Brokers want to fight me. At that time, I was pretty frustrated. I was like, okay, that's cool. I need something to release myself anyways, right? They were like, where's your office? I'm like, here. He's like, what do you want to do? He's like, I'm going to beat you up. Like, this is not okay. I'm like, what do you want me to do, right? I'm telling you everything. So for 2 months straight, pretty much, Paul's my partner in the loan business, and we literally went to the office every day at 3 a.m. because our phone wouldn't stop ringing starting at 7 a.m. to like 8, 9 p.m. So we'll work from like 3 to like 9. And I'll come home, I'll sleep, and Kat will be so upset because I was just running on pure adrenaline, right? So it was during this time, and I was telling Kat at that time, I said, she's like, oh my God, this is horrible. This can't be life, right? And of course, like I'm human, like I get down, right? Like I get sad and depressed and hate life. But at that time, I remember telling Kat, I said, you know what? If God is able to throw this adversity to us, that we're losing hundreds of thousands of dollars every single month, you know what? Then that means we have millions of dollars opportunity coming up, right? And that's when I met with Steve Roberts. You know, I got a phone call. It wasn't really, I didn't even want to meet with Steve Roberts. I called Nico because Nico's father-in-law was my regional and he just wasn't acknowledging anything I was going through. So I called Nico so Nico could tell them that, hey, look, Steve's shopping for a new company. But when I met with Steve over Zoom, I said, okay, cool. Got on a flight, flew to Utah, had a great meeting. And I said, this is sometimes you just know, right? Like I went home, I told Kat, I was like, this company is great. She said, what are they offering? I was like, I don't know. I don't think I care at this point. It was awesome. So I get really pumped. I tell my guys, I was like, guys, you know, InterCab Lending is where we're going, right? They're like, cool. And I didn't hear from Steve for weeks. I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, here I am trying to like, you know, be like, oh, I'm about to take a job that has the lowest pay ever. And I have all these other offers was showing. I had an offer with a Ferrari. You know that? Did I tell you that?
Oh, you told me.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I didn't call.
Yeah.
And then, I was offering the Corolla.
Yeah, I guess. So, you know, and during that time, I was like, damn, I can't get a hold of Steve. I mean, he did reach back to me. He's like, give me some time. I'm like, give you some time. And Paul, like literally one morning, Paul came with a notepad. He threw it out my desk. I was like, he's like, are you out of your mind? I was like, what? He's like, this is how much we're losing. This is how much we're losing in the weekly basis. Like, what are we waiting on? I'm like, I gotta wait for InterCab. He was like, why? It's like us outside of on the road, on the freeway with the sign that says we got $13 million and no one wants it, right? I'm like, I don't know. And then Steve finally calls me and Steve goes, here's the thing. I like you. I want to hire you. Josh loves you, but I just can't do it. They won't let me do it. I'm like, first of all, who the hell's they? What's up, Brock? and he said, well, the issue is we bring you guys on. Our turn time goes from 48 hours or surpass 48 hours. I'm like, I'm at 60 days. Put me out the back. I don't care, right? He was like, no, we just can't do that to our guys. So, of course, I was mad. And I thought about it. I'm like, you know what? What a cool company. They would turn down production because of the promise that they have made to their people, right? So I'm like, okay, fine. And then I'm like, well, can I sneak some loans in? He goes, oh, you know, Steve, right? He's like, I don't know. Let's see what I can do. I'm like, well, can you try? And I didn't hear back. So I called Steve again. I called Josh. I was like, can you guys just come down, please? Just fly down so I have some kind of action so people don't think I'm insane and just sitting in this place and losing money every day. So Steve and Josh flies down. You remember that?
I do.
I picked them up, took them to the conference room of our old company, order lunch then. And then at that time, Steve and Josh, they're just telling us everything. I'm like, well, I don't care about all that. Like, when's, like, offer letter? He was like, well, I don't know. I'm like, well, I was like, Josh, don't you own the company? Like, can you help me out here, right? And then Steve, like, of course, right, Steve's fighting for me too. And they were like, okay, let's sneak some loans in through my name. And then it became a whole negotiation on how many loans I can give them to take, right? Like, it's nuts. And at first, Josh goes, okay, 3 deals. I'm like, no, I need 10. And then Steve goes, 7. I go, fine, 9, right? Like, we're just, like that. That's literally the conversation that we had, trying to sneak loans in. And that went on for a little bit. We got our offer letter. And we, November 15th, we started at Intercap. I remember as soon as I signed the offer letter, I was in the office and I said, Kat, you need to come pick me up, because literally, like, the problems were just ended. My adrenaline went away. I couldn't walk. Kat had to carry me home. Like, she had to, like, drive me to a restaurant, give me some food, drive me, because I was running on adrenaline for 2 months straight, like, sleeping 1.5, 2 hours every day, right? And I was like, wow. And she was like, you okay? I was like, yeah. I was like, you know what's cool? Like, when I was 30, when, like, things hit you, man, your body really just do some incredible things. She was like, you're nuts. Like, you're crazy. I can't cry. I mean, it sucked, you know? But that was the thing, right? Like, that was probably one of the hardest things that I have faced in the industry, of losing, like, literally lost all those partners, lost tons of money. But because of that, we're here. I'm not just saying this for a commercial. This is true. And you could verify this. And because of that, we found Intercap. And because of that, I honestly believe that we're with the best company, best mortgage company in the nation. This is true. And if I could go back and do it again, I'll do it, because that's kind of how it is, right? You got to look at your adversity and go, okay, I just got hit in the face. But if I just cave and say, poor me, things are happening to me, then you just keep going in that circle, yeah, right? You'll never get out of it. But when things start happening for you, then you use that, you leverage it, and that's how you grow, and that's how you get to the next level, right? So, yeah.
Well, you're very inspiring, and you have a natural gift being positive and optimistic. However, life throws things at you, all of us, to beat us down and take that out of us, and you're triumphant every time. But you did, we always like to kind of leave things with a challenge, and you offered a lot of really good insights for us to think about personally, how we'd handle situations.
Absolutely.
You know, do we get up every time we get knocked down? How resourceful are we? You mentioned something about writing down the trials that you've been through and how those, you know, the hard things in your life and how those affect your life. Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah, I think after you told me to write it down, I think I'm going to start writing it down.
But you don't write on it to dwell on it, right?
No,
but it's just like, it's literally, look, this all happened because when we're talking about this podcast, and I haven't talked about the story for a while, and then I was telling you about this, and literally I'm like, wow. Like, it's kind of brought a little fire back, right? Because the second half of 2022 was rough. You know, we lost my mother, future mother-in-law, and today's actually her birthday. And, you know, it's been tough. But the thing is, through it all, we get closer, we get stronger. Yeah, you're right. It's just looking back at all the things that we feel like, gosh, it really sucked. But you had to look back at those situations and go, okay, if I didn't have that situation, what would my life be now? If I didn't have this, what would it be now, right? And sometimes, you know, you just got to tell yourself, you're not that important. Like, things don't just happen to you. Like, no one's out there trying to get you, because you're not that important, yeah, right? It's just, you are important in the sense that it's only one you, and there's a reason why you're here, and you have to do the best you can to reach your potential, and that's on you. But people are not just out there to get you, right? Like, who are we?
Yeah, and I think if you're okay with this, I think a good challenge for us this month would be, instead of looking at the past, we talked about looking forward, think about those things that have made you who you are, but write your story for this year.
Yep.
Be the hero of your story this year and create a story. You know, Michael Jordan always said, if people knew what he knew about visualization, he wouldn't have stood out the way he did. He played every game in his mind before he stepped on the court. And there's things you can do in your mind that your body doesn't know the difference. I mean, I throw down dunks in my mind all the time. I'm amazing in my mind.
You must
but
have a good it, bounce thing.
I can legitimately jump and dunk on 10 feet in my mind. It's a great thing.
I knew you're a powerful gal, but wow.
But the point is that gives us confidence in who we are and where we're going. And so
you know, a challenge this month is to write your story for the year. What do you want it to look like? Doesn't matter what happens to you or the path that you end up, but have that end goal of what you want to do, what you want to be. And so much of it isn't even about reaching that end. Life happens, but it's who we become along the way of reaching that goal.
And I think importantly, don't set unrealistic expectations, right? You're going to have adversity. You're going to have challenges. Things just happen. Life happens.
Yeah.
But don't let it define you, and don't let it take away from the end, right? If you have somewhere you want to go, well, you can still go there. Just know, if it was easy, we'd all be doing it, right? It'd be simple. It'd be boring.
For sure. And we're in a room full of people with incredible mindset. I think the best thing said was just do, you know, act on it now.
Yeah.
You know, just start. Doesn't matter where. It doesn't have to be pretty. You know,
well, so. Steve, I can't thank you enough for sharing your story. I just want to say this. You're more than an employee, you're a friend.
Thanks, Steve.
And it's been great. You really and Kat are amazing people. We're blessed. Mimi and I are blessed to have you in our lives. So
thank you. And see, that's the thing, right? I know I just keep talking, but the thing is, we both, our life is great, right? You guys see my fiance? My God.
You are a good salesman, buddy.
When I met her, I was 20 pounds heavier too. It was not good. Oh.
She said he had a great personality.
I did.
30 pounds.
Yeah.
Woo.
Can you imagine that?
I did.
So the thing is, we both grew up like that with our own parents, but the thing is, we're very blessed, right? We're very blessed, people like you and Mimi, and all people in our life, because yes, we don't have our own parents, but God, we have a lot of parents. And that honestly makes us better than a lot of people, because we get to choose. And they didn't even have a choice, right? They're like, oh, okay. Like, I was like, yeah, this is it. You're stuck with this, right? It's just, at the end of the day, I think it's just life is nuts and things are gonna punch us in the face. But as long as we're grateful for what we have and we see everything as, and don't forget to give gratitude. And just like when things get really bad, I always tell myself, oh man, that's cool. Because when things get really bad, that means something really good is going to happen, right? So you kind of have to just think that. Like, yeah, that's kind of how I go. Like when I'm just like, oh gosh. And Cal would be like, what are we going to do? I was telling her we're going to die. And because we're not going to die. And if we do, then, well, we did whatever we could have done here, right? Then cool. But if we don't, then things are eventually always going to get better. And yeah, I'm just super grateful.
Are too. Thank you.
Thank you. InterCAP is lucky to have you and to be a part of the InterCAP family. Thanks, Steve. Thank you guys so much.
Yes. Thanks to everybody for joining us live. For everybody that's on, we thank you for joining in. I know we went a little longer and we look forward to seeing you next month. So thank you.
Let's have an awesome 2023.
Yes.
Don't forget, you have something to believe in. So
that's right.
Make it good.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.